Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Roto-World Football Show. I am Patrick Daugherty, joined by Mr. Denny Carter. And Tuesday, April 30th, we are going to get more into the fantasy fallout of the 2024 NFL Draft. Mr. Kyle Dvorak and I began that process on Friday with Mr. Connor Rogers. Check out that show if you have not already listened. But we're going to try to really get into like the nitty-gritty today of the fan. And we're going to do that again on Thursday when Kyle comes back and we're joined by a special guest. I can try to give it away. But it's P. Crane. No, that's too obvious. It's Pat K.
There you go. That's it.
Might be joining us on Thursday. Talk the Dynasty Fallout. So we're going to talk. Denny and I are going to try to highlight our favorite fantasy prospect from each of the first four rounds and then one from the final three rounds. And then we're going to talk, I guess, right now, Denny, about Zeke. I mean,
Wait a second. Are you not excited about Zeke reuniting with the Cowboys? Is this not something that thrills you? I'm actually psyched.
Feed Zeke. Feed him. I don't know. I might pull up the Cowboys. Who's in this backfield right now?
Rico Dowdle.
Still does Rico. Is Malik Davis gone?
Who knows?
I don't know if he is. It doesn't matter. He like didn't play last year. There's no way to find out. Yeah, there's not. Wow.
There's no way to find out who's in the backfield in Dallas except for Ezekiel Elliott.
Rico, Malik, Royce Freeman's apparently on the Cowboys right now. Snoop Connor apparently on the Cowboys. But yeah, Zeke, will he be fed? Question mark, Denny. They did not draft a running back. I don't know if this was like a feint or like a smoke screen, but it seemed like they really desperately wanted Jonathan Brooks.
Of course they did.
Jerry doesn't faint, really. He doesn't know how to like
No. No, he telegraphed that from miles away. Obviously, he was going for Brooks, and then David Tepper swooped in and took him to own himself. And yeah, I mean, I think Zeke probably has the inside track of being the lead back of a pass heavy Dallas offense, and he's going to be a PPR RB1. This is my actual take. I'm not trying to be exaggerative. I really think the way we saw Zeke used last year in New England when Ramondre Stevenson went out is the way we're going to see him used in Dallas this year. And that's going to be great for fantasy. The Zoomers are going to have to get their heads around it. I know it's going to be hard for you since all you want is hyper-athleticism and all this. Who cares? No, nobody cares about it.
They want RAS and spark.
Come on. So let's stop pretending any of that matters. What matters is knowing the system. We want a system knower. And Ezekiel Elliott knows the system better than anybody on earth. And he's going to be running routes all the time and catching dump offs all the time. And by the way, doing absolutely nothing with them, but that doesn't matter.
Well, we'll see. So first off, Zeke, relative athletic score is what we referenced with RAS. Zeke has removed the R, the A, and the S from all of his keyboards. His digital phone keyboard. He knows that's just a bunch of malarkey. Zeke, as you referenced, caught 51 balls last year, despite not even starting like half the year. It was his most since the, quote, COVID year in 2020. So I agree with you. It's a very realistic outcome. He becomes the leader of this backfield. I also think that even in Dallas, even with $2 million, I believe his contract, it's possible he doesn't make the team.
Oh.
He might be too cooked. Oh. He might just be too cooked. Like, even for the Cowboys.
I reject that completely. Not because – so in a bubble, that might make sense. Running back A on team B in this situation that makes sense. Jerry Jones is not cutting his dude.
He might cut him.
He might just be too done.
He might be too done.
He wouldn't cut if Ezekiel Elliott tears both Achilles in the preseason. He's still going to be on the opening day roster. He's going to be active.
Gosh, wow.
I mean, there's just no way. I think this is the worst case scenario for Rico Dowdle truthers and folks who are drafting him in best ball. It's over. It's over for your guy. It's completely over.
I don't know about that.
He knows the system, like you said. I think it's kind of a panic depth, cover our bases. He's going to play more than he should. That goes without saying.
Okay.
I just think even for the Cowboys, he might be too cooked. Our guy is totally cooked.
I actually disagree.
All right.
His yards after contact per carry last year was in line with his career mark in that category.
It was a horrifying offense.
And he averaged 3.5 yards per carry. But that offense, I mean, the Patriots last year were basically a UFL team.
They were.
So who's going to succeed in that? I mean, you could have put prime Jamal Charles in that backfield. He would have averaged 3.8 yards per carry. Like, there was just nothing to do, nowhere to go there. And I do think that the Cowboys basically going zero RB and being like, we're not concerned with running back. I think that means they're going to pass
even more
godly amount this
year.
And
it's a good sign, yeah.
And so Ezekiel Elliott is going to be out. I think he's going to be the primary pass catching back, and that's maybe all that matters here.
Is it even worth drafting him, though? Because I've been overusing this cliche lately, or trying to make it a cliche. It's actually not a cliche. It's like, even if everything you just said about Zeke is right, it's like, what do you win when you win? Like, that's like an RB4 at most. Like, Zeke catching 4 or 5 empty passes a week.
No.
Like, that's like because I guess he could be the goal line.
4 or 5? You're giving him 5 receptions a game, and you're saying he's an RB4?
I mean, if it's 4 catches for 28 yards, I mean, that even in PPR, that's not really paying the bills.
I mean, he also will score every touchdown.
I don't know about that. I actually don't really. I don't think it's just like Zeke's the guy. It's going to be a really frustrating committee, I think.
This organization exists to feed Zeke. They don't exist. They don't care about winning Super Bowls. They don't care any of that. They want to feed Zeke. They want to do the spoon thing. They want to do that.
They'll do it on Thanksgiving. I'm not saying start him on Thanksgiving.
The fans want to say feed Zeke. This is all Cowboys fans really want. They don't care about anything else. All right. So they got their guy back. So now they're gonna feed Zeke. It can be simple. I don't care about any metrics or anything.
Oh.
Zeke is back. If Emmitt Smith came back to this team, he would see 300 touches this year.
He's turned on all of his numbers, doesn't care about any metrics.
When you talk about the Cowboys are all about nostalgia and legacy, and they literally don't care about winning at all. It's very clear. It's like painfully clear. True Cowboys fans, like people who are not like pretending like this team is trying to win, they know what I'm talking about.
I think, yeah, I mean, there's definitely an element of truth there. But I also think another back can be – I don't know if the story's over here in this backfield. I'm just going to say that.
I mean, it is April. So.
It is April. They waited 2 months. They showed restraint. They at least waited until after the draft. they keep using that military. I keep using that term correctly. I think that we might take them back, guys. We might do it. And Jerry, you know, trying to be brave, trying to be tough. Like, we might do it.
Yeah. Like, I mean, sure,
Grandpa.
Jerry's had that text in drafts for a long time. A long time.
It really, really has. I guess the Jaguars had this in draft too, that as long as we get a receiver, obviously we're going to cut Zay Jones, right? And then they got a receiver, Brian Thomas, in the first round, right? I can't remember. I think it was the first round. They took Mr. Brian Thomas, an excellent outside prospect. Well, mileage may vary on the fantasy production as a rookie for Mr. Brian Thomas, but he kind of just seems like the good version of Gabriel Davis at this point. I didn't necessarily think this was horrible news for Zay Jones. I thought they might put Brian Thomas, Gabe Davis on the perimeter, and let Zay, let Christian Kirk, let Evan Ingram kind of go wild over the middle of the field, like try to like break the two safeties, try to occupy as much attention as possible deep, and that they might let all three of those guys flourish. But it was getting to the point where this receiver core is not big enough for the five of us. And so I guess I'm not terribly surprised that Zay Jones has been sent packing. What are the takeaways here for this Jags receiver corps?
I think you know, you can assume three receiver sets are going to be Thomas and Gabe Davis on the outside, Christian Kirk in the slot. I think it's really good. I think this is really good for Christian Kirk. I think that he's going to get all of the easy stuff, the stuff that we like as fantasy heads. I think Brian Thomas and Gabe Davis will be extremely frustrating. Their job will be to never get outside of 7 inches from the boundary. You must stay within 1 foot of the boundary at all times.
Dougie is really married to that idea.
Right. And Trevor Lawrence is going to try to jam it in there. You're going to have to make some circus catches. And sometimes that'll work. Brian Thomas does that. He's going to have games that just blow away, you know, the fantasy team you're playing against, and that'll be cool. And then there'll be a 3-game stretch where he catches 2 balls. So it'll be horrible, basically, from a fantasy standpoint. I think Engram and Christian Kirk are clearly going to be the most valuable guys here.
That makes a ton of sense. It's unfortunate because Brian Thomas is like a truly special deep threat, like truly, truly special deep threat. I believe there's a lot of other better ways to make this point, but I believe he had the highest possible deep grade from Pro Football Focus last year. I mean, he averaged almost 18 yards per catch. The guy had 68 catches and he scored 17 touchdowns.
Oh, so crazy.
He scored quite literally on 25% of his catches. I mean, kind of an unfathomable statistic, especially in a receiver corps that also included Malik Nabers at LSU. He's a special deep threat. Like, Trevor Lawrence is not a special deep thrower.
No,
he's just not. As you've highlighted over and over again, you don't even think Trevor Lawrence is good. You don't think he should be starting.
Yeah.
he's not a good deep thrower. He's better than Gabe Davis, but he's a redundancy to Gabe Davis. Where Brian Thomas, I would have been a lot more excited about. We're about to get into the guys we were excited about. Brian Thomas at number 23, he was just one of the guys where I wasn't super excited about his landing spot, despite being pretty interested in the prospect.
I don't know, man. I feel like the way that Brian Thomas plays, the way that he was used in college, the way he probably will be used in the NFL, I mean, maybe I'm stuck on this idea of no more big plays in the NFL, but I'm not interested. I'm just not interested from a fantasy standpoint in a guy who relies on those sort of plays. You know, this isn't 1999. Like, this is an EPA focused league that just wants to throw 7 yards and a cloud of dust. And that's not his game.
I totally agree. I was kind of making that point too. I do think though, it is an effort to maybe get back to that 90s, early 2000s, really entire 20th century style. Give them something to really worry about deep. Try to really inside out the defense because they have something to worry about short too. And it will make the Jags hard to game plan for. And despite the huge talent loss with Calvin Ridley, a way better proven commodity right now than, of course, Brian Thomas or Gabe Davis. But I think it's more sensibly designed Jaguars receiver core now than it was last year. Brian Thomas and Gabe Davis aren't be playing out of position. Like Calvin Ridley, he's like a route tactician, like a technician, and they kept making him catch the ball 7 inches. He should have been going nuts over the field.
And he said that as soon as he left Jacksonville, he was like, "They didn't use me right, and no. I hope the Titans use me right." And the Titans say, "We're not going to do what you did." So I think, you know, just getting off on Ridley, I think Ridley would be fine in Tennessee. I think Brian Thomas, will have some cool plays. Really cool big plays in this offense. I think it'll be few and far between. From a fantasy standpoint, you're going to not enjoy having him on your team.
As a rookie, this happens every year. Like, sleep on first round wide receivers at your own peril. There's always two or three guys where every year, like, I know he's a first round talent. This guy was amazing in college, but like, don't like the landing spot, blah, 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 whatever. And, you know, then like by week three, an instant wide receiver one. It's a dangerous game to sleep on first round in real life receivers in fantasy, but he certainly profiles as one of the rookies who's just going to have a hard time making a consistent impact. In fantasy.
I mean, if the Jags say, look, you know, we're going to involve Brian Thomas at every level of the field, then I'm going to look really silly here because he's going to go bananas. But nothing indicates that he's ready for that or that the team drafted him to do that.
So Denny, not including quarterbacks, pretty crowded first round for skill talent. Marvin Harrison Jr. at number 4, Malik Nabers, Rome Odunze, of course, Brock Bowers, Xavier Worthy, Brian Thomas, a lot of people you can be excited about in fantasy. Ricky Pearsall, of course, as Xavier Legette, you can't be excited about him. You can't be excited about everybody. Crowded group, a lot of people we can choose. We both chose the same guy. Obvious answer for who we're most excited about in the first round. Tell the people who it is and why it is.
Yeah, I can't, from a fantasy standpoint, put Marvin Harrison Jr. above Malik Nabers because of the nature of their game. And I'm going to go back, and I'm going to do this time and again in this podcast because it's really the lens through which I'm evaluating these players purely from a fantasy standpoint. Okay, real life pick, I'm sure Marvin Harrison was a good pick, is going to pay off.
Sure, the guy knows ball. Sure, he breaks down film. He sees things I would never see in a million years. Blah, 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 blah.
That's right. That's right. Okay, so we got that out of the way. Now, if you would like fantasy points, I think that Malik Nabers would be the superior option to Marvin Harrison because of the way he was used at LSU, and I think that he will be used in the Daniel Jones offense. I know that sounds horrible, but the one thing we know Daniel Jones will do, he will check it down, baby. He will not, under any circumstances, throw downfield.
No.
And I think that that's good. At LSU, Malik Nabers, half of his targets last year came within 9 yards of the line of scrimmage. That's an enormous amount of targets near the line of scrimmage. He made the most of them, really efficient on those opportunities. He ran 57% of his pass routes from the slot during his time at LSU. I think we could see that, or maybe more, slot usage for the Giants. And, you know, he's electric. He breaks tackles and he's super fast. So he's going to get these dump offs and he's going to go like Jamar Chase. Right. So I think he has a tremendous ceiling in an offense that has no other viable pass catchers.
Yeah. I'm going to repeat a few points I made over the weekend on the happy hour with Matthew Berry. Maybe you heard of him, Denny.
I have.
You have so sorry if you've already heard me say this, but with a guy like Malik Nabers, even a guy who's like quarterback proof or whatever, you would prefer that he lands with a better quarterback than Daniel Jones or Drew Lock. Like, that part's not debatable, but I think it's part of the reason though why he is there for all the reasons you laid out. Like, he is quarterback proof.
Yeah.
He can be schemed the ball as easily maybe as anyone in the NFL off the bat in like the short to intermediate areas. He's like part of the Daniel Jones like solution and not the problem. He has absolutely no target competition whatsoever. I mean, it's Wandale Robinson and Darius Slayton. Darius Slayton might not be on the team in week one. Jalen Hyatt, they Theo Johnson, whoever that is.
Darren Waller's probably retiring.
Yeah, Darren Waller is doing a really bad job of hiding the fact that he's retiring. I'm not really sure what's going on there. Probably some complicated salary cap contract guarantee.
I mean, he played once with Daniel Jones, I think.
That's true. That is true. And it's always, and I'm going to use this phrasing, it's always a dangerous game with rookies to be like, well, they just have no choice but to get in the ball. Like, we've done this with Michael Gallup before. We've done a lot of guys, they rise from it, they have nowhere else to give the ball. Like, he's got to get like 90, and it's a rookie who doesn't know how to play and he doesn't get the ball. But Malik Nabers is not that guy. And you're not ever going to be that guy at number six. They're going to get him the ball. He's so easy to get the ball. Brian Daboll will spend his entire Giants tenure doing nothing but designing targets, since that's all Daniel Jones can do. And he does just seem too big to fail in fantasy, Malik Nabers.
Oh, yeah. I'm super excited to draft him. I think, obviously in any format I'd want him, but I think from a PPR perspective, it could be kind of silly if they really do just hammer him in the short area. You know, I mean, he even caught a bunch of passes last year behind line of scrimmage, you know. So we're going to get bubble screens. We're going to get easy, easy stuff from Malik Nabers.
And it was so easy to see what the Giants are doing that the defense easily shuts them down.
Yeah.
I mean, that is one that's the fear. But I could not agree with you more. Malik Nabers is my priority over Marvin Harrison. Famous last words. Marvin Harrison is absolutely amazing. But for 2024 fantasy, I do not think you can draft Marvin Harrison over Mr. Malik Nabers. Real quick, do we have any excitement for Xavier Worthy, the deep threat, really, really fast guy? Who landed late in the first round in Kansas City.
Yeah.
A lot of moving parts in that Chiefs skill core. We've seen mixed success with young pass catchers in this Chiefs offense, but he really, really fast.
I mean, I think
small guy go fast.
Yes, and I think the lazy comp, but maybe the right comp, is they're trying, or not maybe not comp, but the right analysis is that they're trying to recreate what they had with Tyreek Hill, the fastest guy in the league.
Or maybe Deshaun Jackson going way back to Andy Reid's Eagles days.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I think the difference, you know, Tyreek Hill is about 15 pounds heavier. I think just generally built more like a fire hydrant.
He is a straight up fire hydrant.
Right. Then Xavier Worthy, who is looks very, very thin. So maybe have one kid, Xavier Worthy, and you'll gain 25 pounds by opening day.
Xavier Worthy is an elite young athlete on Ozempic for some reason. Maybe stop taking that.
That doesn't sound right. But yeah, I look, Xavier Worthy, I was looking into his targets per route run profile for a piece I'm doing on for the website. I'll have it up on Wednesday morning, hopefully. The targets per route run is good, really good at Texas. I was actually pleasantly surprised by that. I think it shows that, you know, as much as they're going to talk him up as a guy to scheme touches to, they don't have to scheme touches to him. And that's good. That's good news. We don't like when a coach instantly says, oh yeah, we'll find a way. This is the Tavon Austin situation.
I mean, again, Xavier Leggett's opening press conference. You, Kyle, and I were all texting each other. Oh man, they mentioned the backfield. It's over.
Like, it's over.
He said was the backfield. It's like, oh my God. Can we just like do the draft over? Like, is this for real?
Comes out and says the receiver we just drafted, we're gonna have to put him in the backfield in order to get him the ball.
That's when like it's like I'm take my mic off my shirt, I get up, I knock over like the bottle of Dasani they've said on the thing, like whatever.
I mean, it's never been more over when a coach says that. I mean, right off the bat, usually you wait till training camp and you see him like running around like a chicken with his head and he doesn't have to do anything. And you're like, okay, well, he's really fast. So we should probably just get him in the backfield and pitch it to him one time.
Jet sweep. His number on his jersey just literally says jet sweep.
Oh, man.
The
jet sweep is a total give up.
It is.
It's just a complete give up. It's saying we don't know what to do with you. We spent a lot of draft capital on you. Here's one jet sweep. I hope you take it to the house. So yeah, Leggett finished, completely done. What was it? Worthy. So they're not going to have to scheme stuff to Worthy. I think if he gets a full complement of snaps, it could be kind of crazy for fantasy.
The only thing I'll say about Worthy is they did. So he's pretty productive at Texas. There was a coaching change from Tom Herman to Steve Sarkisian. I never seemed entirely certain how to use him. Like I say this after perusing like his profile for like 2 days last week, but. They never seemed to – like, Steve Sarkisian tried to make him a deep threat only in 2022, and it did not go well. It should not be used that way.
No.
It's like you're saying, he doesn't need to be used that way. His profile seems a little uncertain to me. He is so fast, though. And the landing spot – we said this with Sky Moore, of course. But unlike Sky Moore, he's actually played big-time college football, produced in the Big 12, biggest stage, all that.
It's totally different than Sky.
Totally, totally different.
I the one thing I worry about is Andy Reid sort of slow walking Worthy, and you know, I could imagine us podcasting in week four and saying, "Oh, Worthy has run a route on 35% of Mahomes' dropbacks," and that's
still playing fewer snaps than Justin Watson, who I thought retired.
Yeah, I mean, you know that's I think that's in the range of outcomes. We have to remember that. But I think that if the team has confidence in him and he's running 70, 80% of the routes, could be great.
He's a guy, too. Like, just don't draft scared. You got to take big swings on Xavier Worthy this summer. You got to take big swings on the first-round receiver in the Pat Mahomes offense. I mean, I'm breaking ground here with my brave argument. But that's a guy where if you're wrong, so be it. But if you're right, it could be fantasy glory. We'll be right back after this talk about rounds 2 through 7. It's the most exciting 120 seconds in sports. Do not miss the 150th running of the Kentucky Derby at Churchill Downs this Saturday. Coverage begins at 2:30 p.m. Eastern, only on NBC and Peacock.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Justin, and so good. Thousands of summer deals at your Nordstrom Rack store. Save up to 60% on new arrivals from Vince, Rag & Bone, Adidas, Joe's, Marc Jacobs, and more. Great brands, great prices every day at Nordstrom Rack. But hurry for first dibs. Get your summer favorites up to 60% off at Nordstrom Rack today. Great brands, great prices. That's why you rack.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
A little surprised the Kentucky Derby isn't the kind of event that like you attend every year. It kind of seems like something you might do. I don't know. You like golf?
I like elitist stuff.
Yeah, exactly. The Kentucky Derby is interesting because it's both very elitist and very common man, where they mingle quite freely there and drink heavily together.
They do. I've actually never even seen a horse, so I would not be at the Kentucky Derby.
I know that's false. I remember you doing a COVID bit with a horse.
That's right. I forgot about the horse farm in my backyard.
I forgot about breeding horses in your backyard that's 10 acres bigger every time you post about it. Up to 10,000 acre backyard. Wow.
All that Puka Nakua last year paid off.
The Kentucky Derby, though, I need to start grinding the horses on that one. I can't bet on it, though. I can't bet in Missouri still.
Be watching. That's all I can say.
I will be watching. We're having a little mini family party, actually. So if you're not watching NBC and Peacock, what are you even doing?
On one TV, I'm going to have the regular NBC on the other TV, I'm going to have Peacock on. Everybody's clear.
Exactly. So if you're not watching the Kentucky Derby, what are you doing? And if you're not drafting Ladd McConkey, what are you doing? We're both most excited about the Georgia receiver from the second round, even though heard a lot, production was, a little spotty.
Yeah.
Elite yards per out run. Yeah, great. Yeah, cool. really amazing 40-yard dash. I'm excited about him too. Tell the people why we're so excited about Ladd McConkey and the early second round of the Chargers.
Yeah. So in his healthy games last season, and I do think like his teammate at Georgia, Brock Bowers, our guy Ladd was banged up a lot.
This is kind of like the early Saban days at Alabama where they would complain like every Alabama guy came into the draft having already sustained like 10 injuries.
Right.
Treat them like NFL players.
Yeah. So I don't know. That's kind of sort of weighing on my mind a little bit as I evaluate Ladd McConkey. But, he goes to a team that had Quentin Johnston as their wide receiver one, no more. Maybe Josh Palmer. Who knows?
It was probably Palmer.
In either case, it's obviously McConkey now. It's going to be a massively run-first offense. There's no way around that. We're talking about bottom five, pass rate over expected, probably something like that. So that has to factor into how we view McConkey. But if you look at, his target earning ability at Georgia, 32% target share in his healthy games in 2023. That's really strong. 24% targets per route run last year. It's not spectacular, but it's good. And it was better than Brock Bowers in the games that they played together. So I think that's a plus on McConkey's side. He was lined up 76% of the time out wide. I'd like to see that change a little bit in LA. I almost said San Diego. I sound like my dad. My dad still calls them the San Diego. Who's San Diego playing today? But anyway, I'd like to see McConkey used in the slot a little bit. But either way, it's a good landing spot, and I think I will end up with some McConkey as my wide receiver three this year.
It's not just the opportunity. Again, I try to remember to not just – like budget in guaranteed opportunity for rookies, right. Even like a second round guy, they show up not ready to play, they're not ready to play, and they will not be forced the ball, even if the competition's like Josh Palmer and Quentin Johnston. But the opportunity certainly profiles as amazing right off the bat, and it's really not just the opportunity, it is also like the intent of this offense, which you got into. It's going to play an entirely different style of football. They want to make things easier for Justin Herbert. It's going to be so annoying in fantasy, but they don't want Justin Herbert to have to throw 45 times a game and do everything. They want him to have a real running game for the first time in his NFL career. And they want him to have these easy targets. I was about to say he's not even guaranteed to be the slot receiver. And I also just – it is losing the best slot receiver in the NFL, Keenan Allen. That's going to hurt more than probably care to admit.
I just don't understand how – Herbert fits into this master plan of Harbaugh's. I just don't know.
But I'm assuming Ladd McConkey is going to get some layup looks.
Yes.
And that he's going to be put in position to catch and run over the middle of the field and the short areas of the field. And the opportunity is amazing. The intent dovetails with how I feel like he should be used as a rookie. And, yeah, it should be pretty great.
Right. So the lens that I mentioned earlier through which I'm evaluating all of these rookie receivers is, are they going to get the easy stuff? And the answer to for McConkey is yes, he will get the easy stuff. How much of it? I don't know. We'll have a better idea in the summer, I think, when they start mini camps, when they start training camp, when we maybe see him in the preseason a little bit. Anyway, I think that we'll get a better idea. But, you know, neighbors, easy stuff. Brian Thomas, no easy stuff. McConkey, easy stuff. All right, so check. I'm just checking the box here, and McConkey does check that box, obviously.
All right. Keon Coleman, probably not easy stuff.
No easy stuff for him. No.
Nope. I would – Keon Coleman, though, still – Xavier Leggett, man. It's just like
– oh, my gosh.
The guy never had more than like 370 yards until his fifth year.
Like, what was it? Like 50% of his production came against like a junior college?
It was like Furman and Jacksonville State, I believe.
Yeah. Honestly, Panthers. I mean, the Panthers. I feel bad. I feel bad for everybody involved. I mean, you know, Bryce Young's career is going to be torpedoed. The new head coach has no chance.
No chance. No.
I mean, just none. He'll never be a head coach again after
that. Dave Canales, the first red flag for Dave Canales should have been that he was hired. Because David Tepper was hiring someone that he thinks he can control and will be pliant.
But these guys work their entire lives to be a head coach. And, you know, who knows for a guy like Canales, maybe he hit it right this time and he would have cooled down as an offensive play caller. I think he had to take it.
He did have to take it.
But I mean, the Panthers draft was absolutely miserable.
Getting hired by the Panthers is a major red flag at this point.
God, no one is going to survive this regime. No.
This guy, Tepper, he's the real deal, man. Like, we've seen enough. He's the real deal. He's the real deal. He's the heir apparent to Daniel Snyder. Like, it's clear as day that he is the real deal in terms of nightmare owners. Who's the real deal? In the third round, Denny, who do you like for fantasy purposes?
Oh, man, I like my easy stuff. I like my across-the-middle short stuff. And we have just the guy for me, Pat. Malachi Corley out of Western Kentucky, drafted by Aaron Rodgers, New York Jets.
I thought you say drafted by Aaron Rodgers.
I wouldn't be shocked if he had a say in this. And here's why. 40 years old. He has an atrophied leg coming into the season. Oh, he does. Did you see the picture of his leg?
I see it. He's going to put muscle back on. He's got some
time. He's going to have to hustle.
He's going to have to hustle.
All right. All right. So here's what we're getting from Aaron Rodgers this year. We're getting an entire season of checkdowns.
Yes.
We are getting nothing downfield.
We're getting sack avoider Aaron Rodgers this year.
He's dropping back and he's dumping it off to Garrett Wilson. He's dumping it off to Breece Hall. I mean, he's going to lead all running backs and targets, easily, because of the nature of this offense. And Malachi Corley fits that program at Western Kentucky. 31% target share last season. That wasn't out of nowhere. You know, he had a 28% target share in 2022. Last year, he was 14th in yards per route run, 5th in yak per reception, lined up in the slot 87% of the time, A-dot under 6. That's good stuff. Now, people will say, oh, he played at Western Kentucky. He played a bunch of community colleges. Okay. Against Ohio State last year, he drew 14 targets. It was a 40-plus percent target share. He caught 8 for 88 and a touchdown against Ohio State. Is Ohio State a community college, Ben?
Yeah, actually, yes.
Oh, wow.
Wish Kyle were on right now.
The Ohio State. Hey, by the way, no offense to me. I went to community college for a couple of years. It happens. I mean, you know, anyway.
Someone argue I did at the University of Missouri.
Malachi Corley, I think, fits what the Jets want to do. Super productive. And honestly, I'm leaning hard on college production here in evaluating these receivers. And he checks all those boxes. So if he gets a full complement of routes, I think he could be really fun for PPR.
You mean the best case outcome with Malachi Corley is, folks, new Randall Cobb just dropped, where he major college producer. He's bigger and more physical probably than Randall Cobb was. Maybe not. Randall Cobb actually was kind of physical coming out of Kentucky. But he's a big physical yak guy. Easy to target. He is the tackle breaker. I remember reading he had some drops and contested catches issues. But like you said, he's not going to be getting contested opportunities. He's going to be getting dump-offs. Aaron Rodgers, the final year before he won those two MVPs, went into, I will not get sacked or turn the ball over mode.
Yeah.
Quite controversially in Green Bay. And I just feel like we're going to get the full-blown return of that this year. As he's 40, he has the popped Achilles. The offensive line is probably still going to be an issue. And it's all too easy to see your vision coming true. Just get the ball out. Be the pressure release valve on Garrett mm-hmm. Wilson. And
he's really good. Corey's really good after the catch, as is reflected in all the data. I did see some pushback I got online on the X platform, formerly known as Twitter, was that his yards per route run was high, artificially high, because he got a lot of short passes. I struggle to agree with that or to buy into this theory. This is the way he was used at Western Kentucky, and furthermore, importantly, it'll be the way he's used in the NFL. They're not going to say, hey, Malachi, you're now our deep threat. It's not happening.
No. The guy I'm excited about, I'm kind of cheating here because I'm not necessarily excited about this guy. It's who I'm concerned about.
Okay.
I'll ask you just right off the bat. Are you concerned about Kyren Williams after the Rams took Blake Corum in the third round?
Okay. Yes.
I was making sure you weren't having your head in the sand.
No, hugely concerned.
So I can't say I'll be drafting Blake Corum, but this is I just feel like people are gonna want to underreact to this because of how good Kyren was. He was an every snap player. He did everything. He filled up the box score. He printed money in fantasy.
Yeah.
But I just don't think the Rams want that. They don't want it. I don't think they trust him to stay durable. Where he had the broken foot as a rookie. He had the high ankle sprain as a sophomore. He did hold up down the stretch. I'm sure they were happy about that, obviously. But I don't think they want to conduct that experiment again. Blake Corum was the third running back off the board. Like that, of course, just speaks for itself. And draft for running back capital was very, very low. The Rams were one of the only teams to invest any of it in the top 90 picks. And I've already made this point too, and I'll probably make it a lot more. Like Sean McVay is a sophisticated NFL coach. Mm-hmm. Even the most sophisticated NFL coach is not going to draft a guy who scored 27 touchdowns last year and not at least give him a chance to be the goal line back.
That's right.
Like it's just not happening. It doesn't matter. Like Sean McVay could be like, well, touchdowns are a meaningless stat. You know, Big Ten, whatever. Kyren is great at the goal. And no, he's going to say touchdown machine, go Burr.
Yeah.
With Blake Corum. It's 27 touchdowns. And it's like a five-alarm fire
yeah.
for Kyren Williams, I
think. Oh, I think at his best ball ADP, it makes Kyren Williams undraftable at the moment. And it's going to fall. It's going to fall because people are going to react to the draft pick of Corum. I mean, Corum was coming off a serious injury last year. Kyle had mentioned last week that Corum's metrics were just an abomination last year.
He was awful. Like Eric Froton laid it out in really, really great detail. Where not a tackle breaker, not like an after the first contact guy. He was basically as bad as possible. It was just all about the offense he was in last year.
Yeah.
The metrics were so bad.
So I think Corum will be a good late round stash sort of play in fantasy. I mean, I say that in April. Who knows how we're going to be perceiving this backfield in July and August, but I have my eyes very much on Corum as a guy who could fall into volume, especially if Kyren Williams struggles with injuries again, and he does have that history.
I will say with Corum, I'm not like drafting Corum yet. It's more than whatever. I'm not drafting Kyren Williams at this point. We'll see. I think one of the counter arguments is going to be they just want Blake Corum. They're worried about Kyren Williams' durability, so they want a plug and play replacement. That's why they drafted Blake Corum. Mm-hmm. I guess could be Sean McVay though, man, he likes a different running back every year.
He likes
a different backfield approach every year. He goes bell cow one year and he goes full blown committee. He drafts a running back like on day two, like every single year. And he's kind of like Kyle Shanahan receivers where he seems to have like hyper specific things he wants from running backs and he like can never find it. So he's always churning and trying to find the next guy. And that's kind of the sense I get with Sean McVay in the backfield. And why I don't think he's going to have like any kind of leftover allegiance to Kyren Williams.
Yeah, I don't think people should assume that Kyren is just going to fall into the same role he had last year. Because that was fun. But also, that came out of nowhere. No one saw that. I mean, I'm sure somebody on Twitter is going to say, hey.
Yeah, well, Hey, but tell you what, bet our Thursday guest, Pat Crane, wishes he had accepted my trade offer for Kyren Williams at the end of last season. Trying to win our dynasty league, you know, I made him a somewhat fair offer for Kyren. He turned it down. Might have to bring it up on Thursday.
Well, that, and look, the turntables have.
Say who's laughing now, Pat? And Pat's like, I wasn't laughing at the time. I thought it was fair. I just didn't want to take it. Like,
who has $2 million now? No, it's actually still Crane. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Oh, wow, Pat. Jeez. Danny, round. Who are you excited about at round four for fan? And round four, you know, this is where we start to get more into like. Maybe like take what we say with a grain of salt because it's really easy to get excited about guys in round four. Uh-huh. Even easier for them to be colossal busts and not do
sure. It. Yeah, I'm not super thrilled about this one, but we're gonna go with Javon Baker, and I think it's partly because he enters a New England offense without a ton of target competition. I mean, a little bit, but I think that he could easily break out.
He's got a lot of target competition, none of it good. That kind of thing.
Yes, yes. I think that he has the kind of profile that could stick out of this sort of faceless, nameless sort of bunch. And, you know, look, he's a big play merchant last year at UCF, not UFC, UCF. He, a former Alabama recruit. He had a 22% target per route run in 2023. It's not the best, but we'll take it. He was basically co-wide receiver one with his fellow receiver at UCF, Kobe Hudson, who is a person I definitely knew existed before I did research. He's not out here dominating his team's targets, okay? Like a Malachi Corley, okay? To a different extent, like Ladd McConkey. So Javon Baker has a lot of question marks, I think, on the production profile. He was 13th in downfield receptions last year in all of college football, 16th in yards on those downfield targets, 22 yards per catch, had basically the same yards per route run as Roma Dunze, better than Roman Wilson. You could do worse. I think you could do worse. But, he's going to be a late-round flyer probably in fantasy. So, you know, go ahead.
You could do worse, but you could also do better.
You and probably do better, too.
I'll tell you with who right after this. Okay. This Sunday, Liverpool and Tottenham face off in a must-win match as time is running out on the Premier League season. Can the Reds keep pace atop the table? Can the Spurs make a late push into the top four? Find out at 11:30 a.m. Eastern exclusively on Peacock this Sunday.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Justin and so good. Thousands of summer deals at your Nordstrom Rack store. Save up to 60% on new arrivals from Vince, Rag & Bone, Adidas, Joe's, Marc Jacobs, and more. Great brands, great prices every day at Nordstrom Rack. But hurry for first dibs. Get your summer favorites up to 60% off at Nordstrom Rack today. Great brands, great prices. That's why you rack.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Yeah, Liverpool's screwed, by the way.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they lost to London.
They had a devastating setback to London recently. They really did. So, yeah, they're going to want that one back big time.
And then Dublin beat them is crazy.
Yeah, Dublin's not. You had it going. You were cooking for a while.
Oh, man.
There's an Irish Premier League, though.
Oh, well.
Also, a Scottish Premier League. There's a lot of different Premier Leagues in the British Isles. So, hold on. So I have a fourth round player. My fourth round thing, I'm kind of cheating again, Denny, where this is more about I'm concerned about someone else And I am excited about this player, but the Dolphins using a fourth-round pick on Jalen Wright. The very, very gimmicky Tennessee Volunteers running back, but who loves gimmicks more than Mike McDaniel? It's kind of the one thing he loves more than life itself. And sure, when the league figures out the gimmicks, they become unwatchable and don't even compete down the stretch, including in the wild card round in Kansas City. But it's going to be awesome until it gets cold.
That's actually the end of the story. There's nothing more to say. It's going to – listen, this kid's going to be great in September. It's going to be awesome, and we're never going to hear his name after the temperature dips below 55. That's it.
So even in Miami, when it gets down under 72, the player's like, oh, man, it's over. The season's over. The game time kickoff jump of 63, they're just totally screwed.
Yeah, they're scoring 6 points.
Anyways, Jalen Wright in the pre-draft process was compared a lot to Raheem Mostert. So people were already kind of connecting dots. Mike McDaniel obviously saw the same thing and has drafted him. And I think it's bad news for Raheem Mostert. He's going on 32. He's been uncommonly healthy over the past 2 years. Low guaranteed. So, I mean, he is guaranteed over $1 million. Low guarantee. He wore down really bad at the end of last season. He was still scoring touchdowns, Raheem Mostert, but he was kind of like Jerick McKinnon-esque. Where it seemed like a veteran they ran it back like one too many times a little bit with Raheem Mostert. Mm-hmm. And I just wouldn't be surprised if Jalen Wright like stole that role out from underneath Raheem Mostert this season. Raheem Mostert will probably still make the team and could even still keep his role. And Jalen Wright, like I said, is coming from a hyper gimmicky offense. He might not even be close to ready. So there are scenarios where Jalen Wright's like a healthy scratch week one.
Sure.
But there's also scenarios where he just steals the Raheem Mostert role. And maybe not at the goal line. I'll say that. Not at the goal line. They're not going to trust him at the goal line. But
I was trying to envision sort of a best case scenario for Wright, and that vision for some reason involved Devon Achane missing time, and then Wright steps into that role. Because
it's true. He could be more of a direct competitor to Devon Achane than he is Raheem Mostert. He just drew Raheem Mostert. And comparisons for that, like that breakaway straightaway speed. He's apparently like a linear guy. He's a breakaway guy, maybe not so much a side to side guy like Devon Achane. And we're like, just get him the ball, let him make a cut, and hopefully he explodes through the second level of the defense.
Right.
But it could be completely possible that he ends up taking more touches from Achane than Mostert.
And I get what you're saying with Mostert being old, uncommonly healthy, which, by the way, is the title of my autobiography. Wow. And I've been sick for 3 weeks. So I get that. But we talk about Zeke being a system knower. I mean, who knows the system better than Raheem Mostert?
Yeah, truly.
I mean, I do feel like he's one of those guys who McDaniel will play no matter what. I think Achane is probably a little more vulnerable here, but I appreciate that McDaniel is committed to the bit of just drafting the fastest guys possible. I like that.
And we do like that. It could also just be like a pure depth bet hedging. It is only the fourth. I mean, it's the fourth round. It's not no draft capital.
Yeah.
But it's the kind of time of draft where you're making luxury picks, and they could have no intention of Jalen Wright playing early in the season. And he's just a guy they want to develop for his speed. He fits the offense well, but they're not planning to involve him really. That's another possible outcome. But a guy who really looks like a Shanny, Mike McDaniel type of guy.
Yeah.
You love to see the fit for Jalen Wright. Who are you excited about in the final three rounds? Because we can't do one from every three round. We can't do one from each of those three rounds. Because this is where it starts to get really dicey. And a Puka Nacua, blah, 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 came out of this last year.
I just want to mention Audric Estime as, I guess, I've accidentally become an Estime truther. But I will say, you know, Sean Payton this week talked about – Sean Payton said a lot this week, actually. But one thing he said was Estime is a strong first and second down runner. So we're talking – and obviously, look, Sean Payton, he has his subscription to PFF. That's what I know after this week. And he saw that, you know, that he is, Estime is a good early down banger. He's not going to see any pass game involvement, which obviously just decimates his ceiling as far as fantasy goes.
He's a competent pass catcher. Sean Payton is usually like playing it straight when he says this. He says who's going to catch the ball and who's not going to catch the ball. And he did not say Estime is going to catch the ball.
And so with Peyton's system being check down heavy, with Bo Nix, the check down king, being under center now.
Your one true god. And then in week three, where's your god now?
Man, I'm more into Nix by the day in that offense. I'm sorry. I didn't intend it. I'm only following the spreadsheet, and the spreadsheet's pointing up.
They lose 17-13 week one. He's 16 of 31 for 160 yards. Kyle Dvorak begins the show, where's your god now?
All right. Well, you forgot to add 60 yards and a touchdown on the ground.
That's true. Yeah, sure.
I mean, estimate could be reasonably useful in fantasy, but it'll be Julio McLaughlin or it'll be Samaje Perine getting all the targets. And that's where the real value will be. And then do you want me to mention my other running
back? Yeah, mention the other guy because I was hoping you would get to.
Yeah. I'm much more excited about Kamani Vidal, who was drafted in the sixth round by the San Diego Chargers. Yeah, and so he enters a backfield with J.K. Dobbins, who is coming off Achilles. And by the way, he said he's 100% healed. He said it was like recovering from a sprained ankle. Again, this is not Galaxy Brains. We're not making this up. This is actually what J.K. Dobbins said. He said it was no big deal.
Real quick, can I interrupt you? We really dropped the ball not doing Galaxy Brains for the draft.
But we're going to be back this week, folks.
Oh, that's right. We are back this week. I forgot.
Come on.
We needed to. Should have done it before the draft.
Yeah, well, we should have, but we didn't. And we're going to be back better than ever. It's going to be a 3-hour special.
Bigger and better than ever. Sorry.
So anyway, he enters. Vidal enters this backfield with J.K. Dobbins saying Achilles is no big deal. Okay. And Gus Edwards being, you know, a decent, competent back, but, you know, you're on mute.
I was just screaming. He's Gus Edwards.
He's Gus Edwards. Yeah. So I don't really see this hyper productive back in Vidal being blocked by, you know, some like immovable force in what will be a run heavy Chargers offense. Vidal led the country with 94 missed tackles this past year. He was fifth in yards after contact. I guess one of the red flags for Vidal is his insane workload over the past 2 years at Troy. He handled 529 carries over those 2 years. He touched the ball almost 900 times at Troy. That's a lot. So I'm for Dynasty, that probably means something. For this year, I think it means nothing. And I think that Jim Harbaugh would just run this guy. I'm trying to avoid. He would run him into the ground.
That's what he's going
to
do.
Yes, he'll run him into the ground. And so I am going to draft Vidal on every single team this summer.
The 900 college touches is a big concern in Dynasty. This might not be a second contract guy. It's probably a plus for redraft because Jim Harbaugh views him as like a lunch pail guy ready to go to work, who handled every situation imaginable at Troy. Took all the work they could give him and held up underneath it. He's so tough. He's a competent pass catcher. He's a tackle breaker. He's a big run guy. He's an element the backfield just did not have before they drafted
him. Right.
He is a sixth rounder. Things can go askance very quickly with sixth rounders. He just might not be able to play. He might not be big enough, so on and so forth. But it's just everything about him screams a Harbaugh guy. And everything about the situation screams he's going to have a big workload. Because Gus Edwards, he's winding down. The Ravens, even with the injuries last year, couldn't ever commit to more than like 13 to 14 carries for Gus Edwards.
Yeah.
And it just seems like all the opportunity in the world is there for Kamani Vidal. J.K. Dobbins is just like, I'll believe J.K. Dobbins is on the field when I see it.
Yeah, no, it's sad. I mean,
it's very sad.
But you just don't come back from an Achilles like that. And he also had the horrible, horrific knee injury.
So he was not even recovered really fully from the knee injury.
No, he wasn't. No. So I think the opportunity is going to be there. I honestly think that Kamani Vidal profiles as right now as the zero RB selection. Like, you need to get him on your best ball teams. You need to eventually get him on your redraft teams. because he will be a plug and play guy if and when he usurps the veterans here.
I totally, totally agree with that analysis. With the caveat, he is also the ultimate guy where you're going to have to follow the coach quotes because, you know, if it's like around training camp starting, like, well, Kamani, we love Kamani, but you know, he's got ways to go. Right? Kamani's right. Got to figure out how to pick up the blitz or something. He's a guy you will have to monitor the coach.
Oh boy, the pick up the blitz. Yeah, you're right. That's coming.
Oh, it could be though. I think the opposite is probably more likely. Like Kamani Vidal, every single summer practice stood out to me. Like that's more likely than the opposite.
I do think that there's a good chance that Kamani Vidal is a household name in fantasy circles come August and September.
And to be honest, the Chargers might have gotten a steal. The NFL teams might have had way too much dynasty league brain. Like, we can't draft a running back that has so many career. Like, dude, the NFL, the way you guys are using, like, a lot of running backs aren't even getting second contracts right now. It's really kind of a scandal because they're so important.
Yes.
And they're like the best athletes get funneled to this position and then they get used up so quickly. So, like, teams might have just, like, we can't draft someone with that workload. But the Chargers are like, what if you did?
And then what if we did?
Continued to do it for 2 to 3 years, and you're not worrying about a second contract. And hopefully he does get a second contract.
Man, I mean, that Greg Roman offense, these guys are never going to pass the ball, especially in the red zone inside the 10. I mean, ooh, man, I need to pump the brakes because I'm going to say something ridiculous about Vidal. Well, but I love the opportunity the potential opportunity for Vidal.
You just said all that stuff about the Chargers offense. You know it's also going to produce – the haters will never recover. It's going to produce like an MVP-type season for Justin Herbert. He's going to be efficient for the first time ever. He's going to look like – I'm telling – it's going to be crazy with Justin Herbert. He's so much more efficient. And kind of like Mr. Inefficient. He's not Mr. Inefficiency. But I think like there's going to be like – there's going to be really, really weird narrative stuff going on with Justin Herbert, I'll say, this year.
I mean, they're going to – so here's the thing. They're going to win a lot of games. So Herbert will be talked about as an MVP because he's the quarterback for the winning team.
His touchdown rate's going to go way up, I bet, though.
Oh, yeah. It has to. It has to.
Man, what a strange, sordid tale the past 4 years of Chargers football has been. Yeah. How many times – man, he had 20 touchdowns last year. Like, what in the friggin' world?
Oh, right.
Brandon Staley needs to be banned from coaching. Like, he needs to. Kellen Moore, too, man. Turn
what
in your
back. What if someone told you in August Justin Herbert's going to throw 20 touchdowns this year? You'd be like, he's only going to play 4 games.
I know. I would have cried. Did you think about mentioning Malik Washington, the sixth round receiver who went to the Dolphins? That's the guy I was going to mention, but I'll give you the floor first.
Well, I mean, just, you know, real quick, we have a blurb today. Mike McDaniel agitated for Washington for several rounds, apparently. He kept saying, Chris Greer, general manager for the Dolphins, you got to draft this guy Washington out of Virginia. He insanely productive. Kyle talked a lot about
him. ACC single season catch record.
Crazy, crazy stuff, right? And now, hey, the Dolphins might actually have a viable pass catcher outside of Waddle and Hill. That'll be cool for this offense.
It sounds like a rich, like, champagne problem. Like, oh wow, yeah, you didn't have a third receiver after friggin' Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle. But it was a huge problem. Sure. It was actually a humongous problem for the Dolphins.
Yes, it was.
They didn't have a viable, like, safety valve guy either. Like, all the Tua just had to keep self-sacking, basically, because they didn't have, like, a good third down target. He profiles as, like, the missing link there, where the number three receiver can just really, really go to work as, like, the ultimate, like, gadget guy over the middle of the field. Like the ultimate, like, springy lower body explosive. It just seems like a born chain mover, kind of, on third down.
Exactly.
And he seems so much like a Mike McDaniel player. Mike McDaniel, again, recognizes this and went out and got him. The number three receiver was just a glaring, glaring need for the Dolphins. I mean, it was like Cedric Wilson. Like, you couldn't even say who it was a lot of the year. Like, we'd be debating on the show, like, who's the, like, covering the mic? Who the hell is
idea. Receiver?
No one. And they're like, Pat, you're not muted. They can still hear you, even though you covered the mic. And like, oh my God, I'm ruined.
By the way, Washington, 11th in yards per route run in college football last year, tied with Xavier Leggett. Yet, we don't like Leggett. It's curious.
It is very, very curious. Very, very, very curious. And he was also like a fifth-year guy, like Xavier Leggett. Apparently he says Leggett, by the way.
Oh, man. That guy's Cajun accent is amazing.
It's not K. He's not from the Cajun zone. He's from the Carolinas, apparently.
Oh, really?
It's like a rural South accent.
Oh, man.
It was not Cajun. Yeah, it's like a rural South accent,
though. He sounds like Gambit from the X-Men.
Yeah, he's got quite the accent. It's going to be one reason why hopefully he's good, so we can hear this guy talk.
Oh, I love to hear him. I loved it.
Yeah, he needs to actually be good so he gets opportunities to speak to the media, but it's over. it's never been more over for an overachieving first round pick. He plays himself into the first round. We're all just like, it's over.
Yeah. But hey, you know what? It might be over for all these Panthers guys.
It's over for it. Oh, I mean, none of these guys are even going to be good on any of these teams. No, it's a joke.
I was like, wait, what?
I do just love Malik Washington.
Yeah.
He just strikes me as such.
And the contingency value is crazy here with Washington.
It is.
Because you're talking about one high ankle sprain for Jaylen Waddle or Tyreek Hill, and Washington becomes very interesting for fantasy.
I'll tell you what, I'd be much happier with getting Malik Washington in the sixth round than I would Ricky Pearsall in the first round.
For sure. The Pearsall, come on,
man. Shanny's just always tilted out of his mind.
Look, Pearsall made a great one-handed catch over the middle. It was great. Did you see it? And he's the first round pick.
Shanny tilts out of it. Man, he's got one receiver demands a trade, and then he panic drafts a receiver.
What's the panic? Like,
chill out, man.
I would have loved Malik Washington to go to San Francisco.
Just seriously, like, relax for 5 seconds. Like, okay, you requested a trade. It's the NFL. Like, who cares? Like, just calm down. This has happened before. It happened with your team before. And right? It's fine. You signed him. Just relax. I got to take a receiver. Anyways, we have to take a break for 2 days, but we'll be back on Thursday with Kyle Dvorchik and Mr. Patrick Crane, special guest. And Denny, what's the article you have coming out on Wednesday again?
Yeah, just the target earning profile of incoming rookies, receivers.
That'll be really, really good stuff. Check out Kyle's dynasty rankings. Check out Denny and Lawrence's stock up, stock down. A lot of really, really good. Check out Kyle's draft grades. A lot of really, really good stuff on the website right now. So for Denny, I'm Pat. Thanks for listening. We'll be back on Thursday.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island.
He's John Lefoot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last Crunch Berry.
No!
No one steals my Crunch Berries.
I think you mean my Crunch Berries. Choose your own Crunch Venture with Cap'n Crunch.